Today is the 17th of March 2018. I'm interviewing Graham and Jennifer Tremaine of Te Ata Tū on the life and times of their family. Graham, would you like to tell me something about your family?
Yes, Frank. Well, I'm not sure how far you want to go back.
Right back.
I guess my earliest memories are growing up in the house, the family home at Northcote, and one that they were renting at the time, but eventually came to own outright. And it was a happy time. And I remember I had a friend over the road, Dickie Joe, I think his name was, and we took photographs of he and I playing together as preschoolers, it would have been. And yeah, had a fair bit to do with my cousin, Bruce Hay, who lived up the road, quite a bit up the road at Northcote, about a mile away. And he was 2 years older than me, but he was a little wee fellow. And so we sort of equated as far as size is concerned. And his mother particularly, my Auntie May, used to take us to a lot of outing, particularly to see relatives. We're going to see Auntie Lil in Howick, because my father came from a large family. I think there were 13 children, 12 of which survived. I think I've got that right. There might have been 12 and 11. And so all these aunties are all part of Dad's family. And so we kept in touch with the family a bit that way, through Auntie May particularly. And my mother had developed some friends through Dad's brothers, and we used to go and see them too. So there was a lot of visiting in those days, more so than I think you get today. So we'd go over for lunch and spend the best part of the day there. Yeah, I remember Uncle Sam's place. And I remember going to Uncle Sam's and Auntie Mildred. And I was left out, he was a painter, and I was left out to run free in the backyard, but that's where he had all his paints, and I ended up mixing them all up.
Oh.
It was not a very successful outing, and it was a rather traumatic episode which seems to have stuck in my mind.
How old would you have been?
Oh, I'd been preschool, probably 3 or 4. So, yes, little incidents like that, and visiting a lot, as I say. And yes, we used to go to the zoo a lot. And Kelvin used to come to the zoo. He was born later, of course. But yes, I think sort of a holiday visit, school holidays even. We used to meet another friend of Mum's, not a relative, and we would have a day at the zoo. And that was sort of another family outing, shall we say. I might come back to it later, but you probably know the story of Kelvin getting doused by this female line. It's one that I told at his wedding, and I told it again the other day when they had the 25th celebration of Kelvin's life. So would you like me to tell you that just quickly? It's one of these outings to the zoo, and Kelvin would have been, I would have been a bit older, Kelvin would have been preschool at that age. And we were looking at the lions, and in those days at the Auckland Zoo, these lions and most of the beasts were in big iron cages. Looking at it today, very cruel and pitiful, really. And they would just walk up and down in front of the thing. Anyhow, this lioness, she was a female, and it's very important to the story, because she just had an overwhelming desire to urinate, so she turned her back on the bars and let rip, and Kelvin caught the lot.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so that, we always said, the family's always said, that that's the reason that Kelvin began his All Black career against the Lions. Well, we thought it was, yes, atonement. It was his day of atonement. Just silly story, really.
Yeah, but so
it was a family joke.
But I suppose what you're saying is that you did things as a family.
Yes.
In a place like Auckland, it wouldn't have been that easy, and money wasn't plentiful.
No, it wasn't, no. And we would use public transport, get in the ferry and go across to Auckland, yes, and then get in the tram and trundle off out to wherever we were going. Tram service was pretty good in those days.
Yes.
So that was it, always public transport. Mm. In fact, the family never owned a car. And that was a bit difficult, really. And later on, when Ian was born, and he spent most of his early years at the Wilson home,
yes,
and we would go out and visit in the weekends, and we were reliant to a large extent on friends providing the transport. It would have been so much more convenient had Dad or Mum learnt to drive.
Now we've mentioned Ian, would you like to just, for the sake of the history, say a few words about Ian and how he came to end up?
Yeah, well, for continuity, there was, I say, my early days, and then Kelvin came along, and I can go back to that, I suppose, and then 4 years later, Ian came, and unfortunately, he had spina bifida, and he was born with spina bifida. In those days, I don't think they had the, they didn't have the knowledge of spina bifida and how to prevent it or what to do with it. And this left him with dislocated hips, I think, and he was incontinent too. And so he was put in, I don't think they'd do it today, he was put in a plaster that went from his waist right down to his ankle, virtually, with a hole cut in it so he could defecate or urinate. And so he had his legs sort of spraced out and cased firmly in this plaster, the theory being that his hips would then go and fall into place and be cured. Which to a degree happened, because he was able to walk with crutches later on, and that is largely as a result of what he would have learnt at the Wilson home. So he would have spent, and I'm not sure how many years he spent full time at the Wilson home, but it would have been certainly his early lives, and 5, 6, 7 perhaps before he came home. And so we would go and visit him and take him for a walk down to the beach, and we had a pushchair that he would put him into, and Kelvin and I, Kelvin was with the surgicals, he was there, and we would run him along the beach and, you know, trying to dodge the waves, and he thought this was great. He would just about fall out of his chair laughing. He had a great sense of humour. Yeah, so then he came home, and he went to school and on a daily basis and completed his school. He went right through to, he was about 15 or so. And then went to the, now there was an organisation, I've forgotten what their name is now, who employed crippled people over on the shore. And he worked for them for most of his life, I think. And so did his wife, Diane, although I think he met Diane really through the Crippled Children's Association, who used to run social functions and that sort. And so they met, she was another spina bifida too. But they married and had a very happy life together, albeit rather short.
Yes. Well, coming back to you, what did your father do those days?
Well, Dad was a welder. He started off as an apprentice for Alex Harvey Limited, I think it was called. He used to do milk cans, amongst other things. So he started off as an apprentice welder and worked for them for the rest of his days. He took them over, it was, I remember now. Yes, so he kept working for them until he was well in his 70s. And they very, very generously chartered him a trip to the UK when Kelvin did his tour of the UK there in 60-61 or something like that. So yes, that was quite a bonus, and I think it was helped a little bit by his cousin, it would have been Stan Tremaine, who was well up with Fisher and Paykel and had a lot to do with Alex Harvey's, and suggested that they might be a nice gesture for Alex Harvey to take. And they took the bait, and they did. So that was a nice trip for Dad, because Dad was always been a keen sportsman. He was an apprentice welder, became welder, stayed with the firm all his life until he was retired in his 70s. But he was only retired for about a year or so, painted the house, and decided this wasn't any good for him, and went and joined the Herald. And he had the job there of going across to the Star, particularly, which was still in vogue in those days. And he would get each edition of the Star, he would collect a number of copies and take them back and distribute those to the various editors at the Herald. And he used to call himself the Star Boy in the Herald. He just kept on working for them and working for them. And he was into his 80s, I think he's about 80. Oh, well into his 80s. He died at 88, so I think he's he would have been 85, maybe more, when he finally retired. And he was conscious of people looking at him and saying, because he was very fit, but people saying, well, how old is he? How old do you think he is?
Graham, what about your mother, besides bringing up all your children? Did she do anything besides being a family?
Well, she was a shorthand typist when she was married. Dad married a local girl, and they built a house at Roscoe, anyhow, in Carrow Avenue. I've seen the house, and it was a nice house, but it was right on the midst of the Depression, and they couldn't keep the mortgage payments going, and they lost it. And that's when they went over to renting the house, what I call the family home, in Princess Street, Northcote, and they finally bought, as I alluded to it before, and it was a good home. But they were always disappointed with that, and then the Labour Party came along, and according to my father's understanding, the Labour Party pulled New Zealand out of the Depression, for which he was eternally grateful, and he was never going to vote for anybody else but Labour for the rest of his days. He thought they were the salvation of New Zealand, and certainly So she was concerned personally. So mother, yes, she was a shorthand typist and carried on working, I think, yes, for Texas Oil. It was a name that comes to mind in those days. And she's carried on, had quite a few friends that she continued to associate with for pretty well the rest of her life that she made there. But she retired when the boys were born, and that's how we were able to get all these trips all over the place. And it wasn't until Ian came along, I think, and he was in the home, and Phil and I would have been, well, we're older anyhow, that she went back to work for the Cancer Society. She certainly ended up, I think she was with them right from the word go. And yeah, so she worked for them for many, many years. I think it was necessary for her to do that, to get out of the house, because I think the problems of Ian weighed pretty heavy on her, as I think she needed that outlet that the work provided to take her mind off the family at the time, family situation as it was, and help to keep her on an even keel. So that was mother. She was a very dominant woman, and she was a matriarch. But yeah, she and Kelvin got on very well together. There was always a bit of friction between mother and myself, personality thing. Kelvin's a sort of personality who would just sort of clap her on the shoulder and say, never mind, mum, for yes, you know, and Kelvin, you would understand that.
It's
followed
through to Simon too.
Yes, it does. That's right. Whereas Chris and I have a lot more in common than I would have with Simon. A lot in common with Chris, characters and in many ways. So, so she was a very dominant woman, and eventually Dad died and the family...
Before we get to that point, you went to school. Which school did you go to?
Oh, well, the local primary school, Northcote Primary, and then to Northcote High School, I think it was in those days. It was an intermediate and a secondary school combined.
That was high school too?
Yes. Well, I didn't go. Mother had ambitions for her sons to be educated as well as possible. And so she managed to get me enrolled at Orton Grammar.
That's nothing to apologise about.
No, looking back on it, it's been great, and I really appreciate it. Retirement wasn't so easy for me, because I had all my friends in Northcote, and I continued to associate with those friends rather than with friends at Grammar. It was easy just to hop up the road in the weekend and run, say hello to them, and at Grammar you only saw them at school time. So I had, although there were some Northcote Birkenhead people going to the school, so it wasn't that bad. And it was a good experience, and I played rugby for them and eventually made the first 15, which was the making of me, I think, as far as Orton Grammar was concerned, and gave me a certain amount of prestige for that final year. And so I went out on a high. But Kelvin took to it like a duck to water, different personality. He made a lot of very good friends there, which lasted him throughout his life, whereas I can't say that. My best friends are still my Northcote friends.
You're more reserved. Chris is reserved. Simon's out there, like his father, out in front.
That's right. That's the way it's got to be.
And so you carried on until you left, and then did you go immediately to dental college?
Yes, I went to, in those days you had to pass what they called the intermediate examination, which was an examination common to doctors, vets, and other sciences. Yes, certainly the vet school required that you had to pass the intermediate examination.
Yes.
I failed horribly in my first year because I had no idea what was expected. I used to go home and spend an hour or so perhaps at night doing homework, and that was fine. That's all I needed to get through Orton Grammar, no trouble at all. But I found out that it needed a lot more than that. So the second year I started working till midnight or later, and I kept on, and that's what was required to get through the university exams. So it was a lesson that I had to learn. And so I passed the intermediate on my second attempt, second year, and went down to Dunedin after that into the dental school, and fortunately managed to get through each year and graduate as a BDS.
And so what age would you have been when you graduated then?
That's a good question, isn't it? 57. How old would I have been? Yes. 57, yeah.
And so Kel at that stage would still be at school?
He would have left school by then. Oh yes, when I graduated he was well. And he went, as you well know, I think, he wanted to be a farmer. And we used to go down to, I think it's where he got his love of farming. He may have got it from other directions as this happened. But we used to go down, Kelvin and I, to my auntie, another aunt. She and her husband had a farm in Te Puke, dairy farm, and ran a sheep on the hills at the back. And we would spend about a fortnight, a week or a fortnight there. And we had a marvellous time. I was talking to a fellow about it yesterday. Had a marvellous time. City yes. boys out on the farm yes. helping, or we thought we were helping, with the hay making probably, and, yes. and they're drafting the sheep yes. and fat lambs. And we were allowed to go and pick up the empty milk cans and take them back to the shed. And they had this horse, Molly, and a sledge. And it was all good fun, and that's, I think, where Kelvin, it was his first experience really of farming, and I think that's, as I say, that's where he developed his first love of farming, and he was always going to be a farmer, so he went into the rural field to ditch, and he never looked back, really.
So, obviously, you all got on very well as a family.
Oh, yes, we did, yeah.
And I suppose you were sporting.
Well, Dad was a sporting one. He loved his sport. I don't think I've said that, or it needs to be emphasised anyhow. He was a very good sportsman. He played cricket, hockey and soccer. He was an Auckland soccer rep for many years. Yes, and he was selected to play for New Zealand on one occasion and ended up with the flu or some for some reason couldn't play, and he wasn't ever selected again. So he lost his one chance. But as an Auckland rep, he was well valued for many years and centre forward. But his love of sport was widespread. And he always saw Kelvin as the All Black. And I can see him now on the front veranda of this house. Is one of the old villa-type houses with a big veranda on the front of it. I can see him now. And Kelvin, you know, probably hardly been at school, 4 or 5, 6, I don't know, sort of young Kelvin, saying to him, "That's not the way you got to tackle. This is what you got to do. Put your arms around, your head down to the other side." And and that's where Kelvin's education began, I think. But he was always a good footballer. I played from early age, and Dad actually coached the Northcote Rugby Colts team, I think it was, for 1 year at least, and Kelvin was playing in that team. He always played a couple of years below the age group of the team. The Colts might have been 7, he would have been 5, and playing for them. Maybe he was a bit older, but that was always that couple of years age difference between them. And he more than held his own. He was a big lad. He was a big boy. Even as a young fellow, he was a big boy. And so, yes, he more than held his own. And so much so that when he was at Northcote Intermediate, there was a chap there named Mr. Underwood. Very good teacher. Very respected by his pupils. Still talk about Mr. Underwood to this day. Yeah, reminisce. But he was a good rugby coach, and he coached the Calixtus Shields, he was it? Whatever it was, anyhow. And he would go and look at the primary schools and see if when they were playing in the odd game, and see if there was any talent coming through there. And he had Kelvin playing in the intermediate team a couple of years before his time, So he was always playing a couple of years below the normal age group.
Obviously he had a natural ability that...
Whatever it was.
He wanted to be at the front. He wanted to be putting the ball over the line.
Always scoring tries. He had the ability and the desire.
And from impossible positions.
Yes. I said to him once in the Barbarians game, I said, "What are you doing out in the wing there?" "Oh," he said, "I thought they might just set the ball out that way, so I thought I'd mosey off out," and sure enough, he picked it up and scored a try.
Now, coming back, once you graduated, where did you go to start as a dentist then? At this stage, you weren't married, were you?
No. Well, I had met Jennifer while I was at dental school in Dunedin, and she was doing home science. We got to be quite friendly in that time, but we broke it off there for a while, and then came back together later on. But not for long, it broke off for long, but 12 months or maybe more. But no, so when I graduated, I had gone through dental school on a government bursary. My parents didn't have the money to put me through. And although you worked, and you could work in those days, in the holidays, very easy for students to get work in the holidays. Yeah. And I know some students that I knew personally who went to the freezing works. This particular one was down in New Plymouth Way. And he would earn enough money to finance himself through the university. I never could, wool, I used to do wool stores. It was good, a good experience, out to the wool stores and down on the wharves and out in the roads. Yeah, went a lot of, and it was a good experience because, you say, a lot of other students. But I went through on a government bursary because they were short of dentists at that stage and they were only too keen to help you get through. So I can't remember the exact terms of the bursary, but it gave you a generous boarding allowance, virtually paid for my board, and gave you additional allowance to cover your fees. Well, in fact, in those days, your your fees were covered by the fact that you had university entrance. And I'm wondering, this day and age, that kids have to pay everything, and that's well gone. In those days, it wasn't hard. Your fees were covered. So all you had to do was cover your books and expenses like that, living expenses, which weren't a lot. You had enough for a couple of bottles of beer at the end of the week. So, yes, I went through and got through and graduated in 57. And because I was on this bursary, there was an obligation, which I think they should have today, for these kids who are getting money, and even though they're having to pay it back, there should be an obligation for them, one, to not be able to go overseas until they have paid it back, particularly, but we had to pay it back by working for the government for 3 years. And so I was fortunate, really, to get into the Navy. And because I was interested in sailing, and it's always been my sport, apart from rugby, a summer sport, because in those days you could have a sport in the summer and you could have a sport in the winter, and you used to have dual All Blacks. Yeah, what's his name?
The underarm bowler man.
Yeah, the one who suffered the underarm.
I know.
What's his name again?
Mick.
He was, I think, he was fullback for the All Blacks. Yeah, come to me. But yes, he was probably one of the last ones.
And we both know who we're talking about.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so my summer sport was sailing, and their winter sport was rugby. And I enjoyed my rugby, yes. I had a lot of rugby, particularly varsity third grade. I played with some chaps like John Graham, and we had a good team. And how did I get on to that? I've forgotten now. I talked about being down in Dunedin and the Navy, that's right. And that was pretty straightforward. You went through and I went in as a dentist. It was a good place to start your practice because, to his everlasting credit, the commander of the dental unit, Commander Horn, never got on my back and said, Tremaine, you should be turning out more than what you're doing. I could spend all day putting in a simple amalgam or something like that. So perfecting my technique. And so, you know, I appreciated that. It was good training for as far as dentistry was concerned. Other than that, I never did get to learn to work fast. So that was always a bit of a handicap in private practice.
But sometimes they say, do it once and do it properly.
Oh, that's always been my... I tried to make that my... Yeah.
So then, once you'd finished your training, you came back on shore again.
Yes, that's right. I'd done it 3 years and I wasn't particularly enamored with the way of life in the Navy. A lot of it was due to my upbringing, I think, and they were all pretty upper class. They used to think they were upper class anyhow. Yes. I never did. There was that sort of unspoken but friction there in my mind, and I never really felt comfortable, I mean, better in the Army and Air Force, they were a lot more relaxed. The Navy, I don't know if it still has, but it just had that sort of class system amongst the officers, which was reflected right down to the lower deck, of course. So I had no intention of going doing any more than 3 years, and I looked around for a Devonport for about 9 months for a chap who was going away, and that was a good experience too, to see how I have a little bit of experience in private practice. And then I bought a practice out in Henderson, and I spent the rest of my working days in Henderson in that practice for many years until I was about 60. I'll give you a date. I had several locums, and finally one of them wanted to buy the practice. No, he was very good, and I bought him in as an associate, and then he bought me out, and I ended up working for him. The wheel went the full circle. And I was conscious at that stage that Kelvin had not been long dead. I mean, I thought, I don't want to have Jennifer having to dispose of practices and things like that. So it came at a good time, and so I was able to get my money out. But
as a young man, you met Jennifer at Dunedin.
That's right, yes. At Dunedin, they had a hall called the Allen Hall, I think, and every weekend, every Saturday night, there was some sort of a hop, they used to call them, and it would be run by various organisations. And so I had nothing to do this Saturday, and I just took myself off down to the hall, and here was this very nice-looking lady over the other side of the room. Of course, in those days, we've lost a bit these days, the younger generation, we used to have to go and say, may I have the pleasure of this dance? Remember that?
And we could dance, we learnt to dance.
Well, at Auckland Grammar, we used to go to a place called Jock Hutchison School of Dancing. That was where everybody went. Children, I'll never know how much he owes to me. I used to be the old one, had to suss all this out. And then when Kelvin came along, well, yes, Graham went today, you'll go to Jock Hutchison School of Dancing too. So it became an automatic procedure where I'd done all the hard spray work getting it set up in the first place.
So,
how can I have the pleasure of this dance? And she was a good dancer. And so it just progressed from there. Yeah, she was a very good dancer. And we kept on going out together for pretty well all the time we're down in Dunedin, a couple of years, I think. Jennifer will tell you.
Just before that, at this point, had your father passed away?
Oh, no. He was still with us. His health was pretty good up until the last 12 months or so, perhaps, when he started to get the odd stroke. Looking back on it, you realise it was a stroke.
Then, of course, your mother, she still had a lot of years to go, didn't she?
Yes, she did. That's right. So your dad was certainly very much alive when I married, when we married. Yes, he was when Kelvin married, too, I'm sure. Of course he was, yes. Remember Kelvin at the funeral? Well, I remember writing out a resume of his life, or possibly call it a eulogy, and giving it to Kelvin to say, you know, is this okay? Is this accurate? He was very much alive then, Kelvin, yes. Now, you can work him out. Dad was 88. He was born in 1999, so that would have been 87. So Kelvin was still... He wasn't in the All Blacks, but he might have still been playing rugby at 87.
Well, we can get Jennifer to pop in. Now, Jennifer is going to tell us where she met Graham. The ball's in your court now.
Well, it was one of the regular university hops, as they were called at Otago. And it was always a Saturday night occasion. And because of my fondness for ballroom dancing, I took advantage of almost any function that I could go to in the Allen Hall. And on this particular occasion, it seemed to be, to me, there seemed to be a lot of wallflowers. The girls sit around the wall, and I remember I didn't want to be crowded in by the other wallflowers, so I separated myself and went and stood in another part of the hall. And I thought the chances of my getting a dance may be more.
Well, I haven't heard this before.
I might have more chance of getting a dancing partner, and it was very quick that I got a dancing partner who happened to be Graham, and he literally just came out of the crowd. I wasn't aware of the other fellows in the ball particularly, and it was just a total, we were meant to dance together. It was a very good quick step that we got into, and I was aware that he was quite a capable and very good dancer, and did the manly thing and led his partner very well around the floor. And that's how it started.
So what were you doing in Dunedin?
Yes, my ambition had been to become a dietitian, and thanks to being accepted for a health department bursary and with a little bit of financial help from my father, I was able to go to Dunedin. But for me, for the three-year course, followed by another 15 months to complete the dietetics qualification. But for me, I was living in Wellington as a teenager. And when I went back to Dunedin, and I say go back to Dunedin because I was actually born in Dunedin, and my families were both early settlers in Dunedin, and so there was very strong family roots there. One side of the family, the maternal side, were Scottish and had come out as very poor immigrants. And then on my father's side, the Gael side, they were English, and they were from Ravensbourne. So whilst on my father's side, he being the youngest of five children, his parents were very elderly when I was born, and in actual fact, I only was introduced to my grandfather, Gael, just before he passed away, so I never knew him. But on my mother's side, there was a very strong maternal attachment, and we spent a lot of time with them. So for going back to Dunedin, having left Dunedin at my age of 10, because my father was promoted in the customs from the local office to head office in Wellington, when I got of an age to leave school, it was like going back home, so it wasn't a big thing for me, although I was in a hostel on a flat. It was still a very comfortable place for me. And as far as my training was concerned, there's nothing else that I could have done that would have given me more pleasure. I was absolutely in the right place at the right time. So the fact that I found a wonderful husband, your husband.
I'm not sure, was it the training or was it the boyfriend?
They went together.
And did you play any sports, Jennifer?
At school, well, most of my sporting had been tennis and basketball, and I had an opportunity to play in one of the senior basketball teams when I was at Wellington Girls College, but I declined that opportunity in preference to continuing with my music, piano studies.
And you still play the piano?
No, I've had a lot of pleasure from it, but I was never, once our daughters were learning music, I got all the pleasure from seeing them learning and doing very well. Tennis was a big thing. I love tennis, really enjoyed tennis, and for a while when we were married I did play Ladies' Day tennis. But I've dabbled in a few sports and never been terribly good at any of them.
Well, it's taking part. It's important. Children. How many children do you have?
We've got two daughters.
Yes.
And the oldest one was baptised Deborah Lee Tremaine, but she's called Lee. We were very pleased to have some biblical name. Graham was very strong on that. And I was always pleased at the choice of names for her. Have some regrets that we never included any family names, because there were lovely names on both sides
of my family. Ruth is a family name.
Yes, but that's our granddaughter, not our daughter. Although Roslyn, the second daughter, she's got my name as her middle name. And this just on 4 years age difference in them.
I think you mentioned the Christian naming, that we've both been brought up as Christians, Sunday school, and we used to go to, Mum was an Anglican, and she practiced her faith, well, almost until the end when she was not able to get out so readily. But in spite of being baptised or christened in the Anglican church, we went to my father's church, which was the Presbyterian one, only because another aunt, Auntie Doss, ran the Sunday school. And yes, it's a big family connection here. And so we were brought up there at Bible class, and Jennifer's had a similar training, shall we say, or education in Christian ways, and we still are practicing Christians.
When I was about seven, I was told to go to Sunday school at the Anglican Church in Havelock. Well, on the way, I met a couple of mates who were going to the Presbyterian Church. I went to Presbyterian Church for 2 years before my parents knew that I had been anglicised. And in fact, when I came to be married, I couldn't be married as an Anglican because I hadn't been baptised in the church. Grandchildren.
Yes. Four.
No, one's called Ruth.
Yeah, that's the oldest one and the only granddaughter that we
have.
Okay. She's now 27, based in London at the moment. And the next one is Keith, who's 24 at the moment. And he's living with his girlfriend in Vancouver. Then we go down to Graham Jr., who's 19. I think he was 20 last birthday, wasn't he? No, he's 19, that's right. And he's studying at Victoria University. And then Cameron, he's the youngest, he's just turned 16 a couple of weeks. Yeah, and he's still at home in Tauranga.
Do you play Mahjong or...?
I'm not very interested in board games or cards. I've never had much of an affinity with cards or numbers.
Yes.
And I'm more inclined to do the gardening, go for a walk and write emails, more domesticated.
Once you settled here, you've stayed here, haven't you?
Yes, that's been an interesting part of our walk, because it's come up from time to time, you know, should we shift? And while Graham was working, it came up too. And the house always had more things to do to it, and I could not see any point in selling an incomplete house, I hadn't finished with. And the upheaval, mainly influenced by having had quite a lot of shifts in the early part of our marriage, which I didn't enjoy and
didn't cope with it that well.
Didn't find that much reason for it. I couldn't see much benefit in constantly shifting unless there was good reason. And I have mentioned to Graham several times there was only two real incentives for me to shift, and one was if he wanted to do postgraduate study or else buy a property at Takapuna Beach. And he didn't go along with either of those.
Yes.
So we've stayed.
And I guess over the years you build up friends and association with the community. And
yes, we've got some very good friends, and it's been reinforced many times since I was diagnosed with this tumour. And I have been just overwhelmed, really, by the number of people who have shown genuine concern. And, yeah, it's very humbling, humbling to realise that people can think of you enough to want to inquire after you and support you.
It's fascinating listening to you and just hearing you talk. It's the Tremaine that I hear talking.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, we can carry on back with you.
Where did we get to? We got to getting married. No, we haven't got married yet.
But you had your children.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I've got them in the wrong order.
Oh, well, as I said to you before, briefly, we had a little time of separation, 12 months or so.
Yeah, about 12 months.
And then we came back together again. You know, Jennifer hove to on the horizon there one day, and I looked and I thought, what a fool I am. What am I doing mucking around here? So anyhow, from that time we had a very nice association, a very nice period of romance, and ending up getting married when I was in the second of my 3 years in the Navy, I think. Again, I'll throw it in and you can do what you like with it.
You're in your third year.
We didn't have that long. But they used to have wardroom. Jennifer never related. I said I was never completely comfortable in the wardroom atmosphere. And Jennifer never related to it as a naval wife.
Mm.
And I think what put her off was that very shortly, probably because we were just married, that we were invited to the naval officer, Auckland Knocker they called him, to a cocktail party. Cocktail parties probably still are very much the thing, and again, part of their way of life. And one of these, I think it was probably the hostess, Knocker's wife, said, oh, my dear, how are you going to enjoy being a naval officer's wife? Well, that just didn't go. That put her off completely, wasn't it?
It was a very artificial environment, and
yes.
I didn't think that was it didn't fit with my attitude towards life.
Because you would have had some rank as...
Yes, I was a lieutenant. A lieutenant, two rings.
So you weren't just an able seaman?
No, I had a bit of rank, all right. And yeah, it went with the job. Probably it came before I was... I don't think that I was a very good officer, put it that way. And had I come up through the ranks, I would have had a better appreciation.
Well, that's right, because you came in, the others had done their basic training, their discipline, and all the framework
that really goes with it. So it wasn't easy.
Jennifer, because we haven't got Kel around to tell us about the Auckland connection, this, I hope, will give us a foundation to build the next part of this interview, and that's with Pam. And then with the boys, and we should end up with a nice picture. You haven't mentioned any grandparents of the Tremaines. Did they come out here?
No. So my grandfather, paternal grandfather, dad's father, was born here, but he came out as a baby. And don't know where he got his wife from. But that was my father, and on my mother's side, yes, she came out as a teenager, I think it was.
Would you have met any of your grandparents?
Yes, mother, yes.
Yes.
Yes, used to call her Nanny. Again, in there. Yes. But she had, it's quite an interesting history, actually, which is worth reading. Mm. And she had married a couple of times, and I never met her husbands as such. There was a friend, I think he was only a friend.
Sure.
He'd see occasionally. But I never met any of her husbands. But she was very much a constant feature in our lives growing up. She just lived down the road, or she rented down the road, and we saw a lot of Nanny. Yeah, she was very good to us. And yes, Kelvin and myself again. So she was, I guess she was something that my mother could lean on.
And then after your father passed away, your mother moved to Napier, which must have been a big surprise.
It was to me. Yeah. So after Dad passed away, Colin found this nice place for her. Well, suggested that she might be interested, and it was brand new. And so she came home announcing that she was going to go down there. And I remember saying to her mother, "What on earth do you want to go all that way for? You've got all your friends up here, all your connections." And she said, It's got all the things I never had in my home. And that was the big thing. She wanted this brand new home with all the modern, their old home had what was an old home, still there, but it would have been the early 1900s, I think. And so that was her reason. I think she's probably, quite happy to go and spend some time with Kelvin too and his family. So she went down, and it worked out very well for her. Being the type of personality that she was, she didn't take long to find friends down there. So she had a happy time down there. She was very content down there. In fact, if anything, she was more the queen lady. What's the word I'm looking for down there?
Queen bee,
yes. Yeah, she was more the queen bee down there than she was up in the Wilton. She likes that sort of thing. And the Kelvin's boys grew up having her there. She would have had 10 years or so. She was 85 or something. She would have been more than that. She was 85 when she went down.
Yeah.
She was 101 when she died, so 16 years. So she had quite a long time with the boys, and they all came to love her dearly.
Now, is there anything that you've forgotten to tell me about that was important in the growing up?
Well, I was thinking you were going to ask me more on Kelvin and his association. I have to say, Frank, that my memory of him and family life is a bit dim. He was always there. But what I thought I might say to you is that he was always the entrepreneur, and he would have a herald round. For quite a long time he had a herald round, a little bit of heralds, and I wasn't interested in that sort of thing. I wasn't. You know, it wasn't my thing. But also I was going to Auckland Grammar and having to get up early and catch the boat across.
Sure.
And he was still at intermediate school at that stage. He was never much of a mechanic, and his bike was always breaking down. He was always using my bike. I resented that a bit.
Yes.
Because I was the type of guy who would keep his bike in good order.
Yes,
right. They had two different personalities in there, probably Simon and Chris. But he would allow me to ask me to help him in the school holidays, which I would do. And there is also this family joke that we have. I was delivering heralds with him, and we were going down a very steep hill, which leads down towards where the well, it's not there now, is it? Really, Ondershell Way, anyhow, a steep hill going down from Northgate. And I was delivering these heralds, and the next thing I heard a rattle and stones going right, left, and centre. And Colvin saying, "Hey, Graham, my chain's come off." And what I thought was pretty good presence of mind for a young fellow, I said, "Well, don't try and get off, stay on it." Because I was thinking, if he tried to get off and he was going that fast on this metal road, he's going to end up a bit of a mess. So he did, he stayed on. And unfortunately for him, the tide was in, and he went bounce over the edge and right into the tide. Heralds and all. That's one little incident I remember. I told that at his wedding too. But he was always into sport, as I say. We mentioned his rugby, and he sailed in the summertime too. He did quite a bit of sailing, and whatever he did, he was pretty good at. Tennis or whatever. But as far as other incidents go, I can't think of anything in particular. He had his friends and I had mine. He ended up going to grammar too, as I said to you before. He took like a duck to water. Some of his best friends still are probably grammar friends. Yes, he was very good. What I should say is that he was very good with Ian. Again, might be a personality thing, Frank. You've brought that out, rather. You've seen that in this discussion. But when Ian had his plaster removed and he was on crutches, and Ian was pretty good on his crutch. He was a good bowler in his own right. He won some championships with teams. I was always a bit embarrassed with Ian, to my shame, really, looking back now. But I never quite handled. Whereas Colvin was just so good to him. He put him on his boat, whose boat it was, and take him out for a spin. And he included Ian in so many activities. They're closer age, so that would be easier, I suppose, if you're looking for excuses. But all credit to Colvin. Yes. He was a very good brother to Ian.
He's a very generous person, and that's followed through
all the way through
the family. Amazing. I just can't believe at times the generosity and the kindness.
So, yes, I can't think of much else about Kelvin. Can you, Jennifer? The time he rolled up at my university. It's,
oh, he came to the flat. He was down at Invercargill then, wasn't he? Down Southland?
On a farm, part of the rural field cadetship. They used to spend so much time on an actual farm and then so much time back at the university. So he bowled in large as life one weekend and set up camp in my room, and we went to a dance, didn't we? I took him to a dance. Yes, that's when he met Fleur.
Oh, that's right. He couldn't get his tongue round Fleur, so he called a flirt.
Yeah, that was Kelvin. He bowled in, bowled out. And he was also very good to me, Kelvin. He used to look after me a bit as far as rugby was concerned, inviting me to after-match functions. And right from the word go, because he had his first rep match for Southland. That was his first province he represented, I was down at Dunedin at the time, and I went along to the game. So he, in his very first game, organised, got an okay with the coach for me to come in and join him in the after-match function. And I went to many after-match functions on his invite. But that's Kelvin.
Okay, well, I think that's probably a nice note to finish on. And thank you, Graham and Jennifer. It's nice to have met you both. And just completes the picture because, you know, Kel used to talk about his Auckland family. And Ian, he used to talk about the group that Ian was part of. And he thought out loud.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. And we'll go from there.
Good. All right. Well, I hope it's been some help to you, friend.